guess what day it is.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
You know, we lose, we go home. We've won three in a row many times this year. We like the way it lines up. We just obviously have to get through today.
High fly ball in the air to left. Cubs strike first. Tape measure shot by Chris Bryant. In the air to center. Nate Gwynn to his left. Chisholm home. Neither one gets it. One run scores. Here comes Zobrist. Throw home. Safe as the ball gets away and Russell ends up at third. Big misplay out in right center. It's 3-0. 2-0. High fly ball to left center. At the wall. Grand slam. 7-0 Chicago.
I like this kind of party. I like this kind of party, baby.
Rizzo into right field. This ball is out of here. 9-2. This is Russell. Cubs have forced the game 7. Winning at 9-3.
Of course, we want to be the group that breaks the string, but you're probably right. It's just correct and apt that we would go 7 games.
Hey, hey, holy mackerel, no doubt about it. The Cubs are on their way. Hey, hey, hey!
We gotta lay down and die, oh no, not I.
Got them right where we want them. Told you yesterday. Nice job, as always, Jake. Mike Jacobson, the orchestra conductor, puts together all the sound on the show, stays up till the middle of the night going, I'll put this here, I'll put that there, then I'll put this here, then I'll put that there. And then he snickers and rubs his hands with delight like Dr. Evil. At 6:14, you get exactly what you should get. After 108 years, it should go 7. It should go down to the ninth tonight.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely.
It should be the bottom of the ninth tonight where a limping Aroldis Chapman comes into the game with barely the strength to grab a cup of water as he crawls to the mound.
He's a rock
and strikes
star.
Out the last two batters to end the World Series.
Oh, I know. How about it?
Cubs win 3-2.
I couldn't believe that game.
Well, the game
right
was
from
over.
The start.
Yeah, the game was over early. Oh. And all right, so anyway, about the Chapman thing. Let's go live to Dave Bennett in Cleveland. Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a warm, unseasonably mild morning.
It's almost as if you're still in the studio, how good this line is.
It really is.
All right, so Joe Maddon puts in Aroldis Chapman in what felt like the third inning.
The seventh.
And for the second time in a row, game-wise, and second time in 3 days, he's asked to get a whole bunch of outs. You get a couple of bonus runs, and you have the luxury of pulling him, but in a play at first base, he jams his knee. Mistake? Not a mistake.
To put him in?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, he was able to continue pitching, so I don't know how badly jammed his knee really was. Mm-hmm. He limped a little bit after the play. But I look, he's got to win that game. And if Matt feels Chapman has told him he can get him some outs, he was ready to do it. Maddon goes to him. Because Maddon feels like you can't let this game get away. You've
all right,
got
now,
this comfortable
but
lead.
Here's the other thing. You won 103 games. A lot of those games before Aroldis Chapman even got to
That's
town.
That's true.
So don't you have to have enough confidence in the rest of your bullpen with a 5-run lead to get the outs you need to end that game?
Well, I think he...
No.
Well,
I agree. No.
Speaking on behalf of every Cub fan, no. No.
He said he only trusted two pitchers. Right, Dave?
He did make that comment.
Yes.
But I think... You know, you're talking about one of the premier relievers in the game. You need your absolute best.
But what if he's really tired tonight, and what if he can't pitch?
Well, he'll pitch tonight.
Okay. First of all, he says he is going to pitch tonight.
But what if he's tired?
He's not tired. He's going to pitch. It's the freaking last game of the World Series.
It's hard to throw a baseball.
He can nap all day.
Does he have a MyPillow? We should send him a MyPillow.
Yeah.
Oh,
quickly.
Yeah.
Quickly.
Yeah.
And
do it soon.
Yeah. That also, John Lester is available tonight to come out of the bullpen.
There you go.
I'm not crazy about that idea.
I think he's going to put the starters in.
If I'm Cleveland, I'll run all day. I'll just run all day. I won't even hit. I'll just start at first.
You
got to
get on base.
No, I'll just start at first. I'll just go right out to first and start right there.
I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Lester tonight, too. Because you can't put, honestly, you can't put in like a Pedro Strop or someone. You just cannot take
that
chance.
I mean, Strop's been pretty good.
I still get the heebie-jeebies when he comes in sometimes.
I think you'll see everybody tonight.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Except Arrieta.
No, Arrieta said he is available.
Everybody's available. It's game seven of the World Series. You got all winter to recover.
Different spring training. Different pitch every inning. Pitch a pitch. Different one.
Right.
It's like an all-star game.
I just love watching Madden work. I mean, Madden is just a genius. He's hilarious.
He didn't have as much fun last night. Well, he was grinding.
Oh, I know.
He had a lot of coffee.
He wasn't smiling Joe.
Drinking the coffee. And that other coach... He's always chewing. He's always eating something.
It's Francona. Yeah,
Francona.
Tito.
Tito's a mess. They asked Andrew Miller, who is the biggest, who eats the most on the team.
Oh, it's Francona.
Yeah, and he said him, and he said he's always chewing something.
Yeah, that's his nervous thing.
Yeah.
Would you like to hear what Madden said about the Chapman thing?
I'd like you to hold that for me because we're going to have Kevin on in a few minutes. And we'll play it with Kevin. Yes. Okay. At 6:18, let's get Mary in here. We got a bunch of politics to talk about as well. Don't know if you heard the next president will be elected next Tuesday. And both campaigns have decided to end this final week of this unending campaign with what we really need to know. Not how they'll do the job, but the fact that the other person sucks.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Come on! 6:23. Actually, still live in Cleveland. Having the best month of his life. Just running around, running up an expense account. Eating free food, watching baseball. Tough job, dude.
You just see the expense account right now, Steve. It's huge.
I'll bet.
It's huge.
I'll bet. Kevin Powell spent over $1,000 in Cracker Jacks last night. Do people still eat Cracker Jacks at baseball games?
They still sell them, yeah.
Did you get a surprise? Did you get a surprise in the box?
Did you get a surprise, Kevin?
They don't give you like an actual toy or whatever. It's like a little.
What do you have to? You have to download the app.
A fake tattoo.
The Cracker Jack app.
I'm serious.
A fake tattoo.
It is. It's like a little. It's like a little sheet, little cutout, and it has some sort of download. Something you can download.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Yeah. Next thing you know, they'll be using aluminum Cracker Jacks. What? No, those are bats. All right, so we were just talking about the Aroldis Chapman thing. Madden seemed like he knew what he was doing because the voices in his head told him to do that. I didn't like the move, did you?
Yeah, I liked it. The only thing I didn't like was that when he was out there, and in particular in the eighth inning, I couldn't believe he just didn't have anybody at least getting up in the bullpen in case something happened. Now, what did happen, the reason he came out in the ninth is Madden didn't feel that comfortable with the 5-run lead. As crazy as it sounds, he wasn't taking any chances. It was a 5-run lead. Then Rizzo homers, it becomes a 7-run game. And by the time that the bottom of the ninth came, they didn't have anybody else. Strope wasn't ready in time.
Yeah, so then you still had to have Chapman pitch,
go out pitch a little more. Yeah, and if that's why I was just surprised somebody at least just wasn't getting up, starting stretching at anything. So that was the only thing I didn't agree with. I was totally fine with bringing him in on the seventh.
Again, I don't understand the lack of confidence in the other guys on the team. You got a 5-run lead. Why can't your bullpen that helped to get you 103 wins get you save a 5-run lead? I don't get that.
Yeah, I don't think he has a ton of confidence in the rest of the bullpen right now, which. It hasn't looked phenomenal. I mean, they haven't been bad, but Chapman's your best bet. You can't take any chances. You got to win the inning. You got to win the game for to live another day. I was completely fine with bringing him in the seventh. If he's your best relief pitcher, you want him at the most crucial spot, and that was the most crucial spot with the Indians' heart of their lineup coming up in the seventh inning with runners in scoring position. So, again, I was completely fine with it. And Madden doesn't think it affects Chapman's availability for tonight either.
I don't know. I think he could be tired. That baseball gets heavy. Schwarber hits second. It changes the lineup. But is that why they hit last night, or they hit because they hit?
Dang, they hit because they hit. I mean, you saw it with the Bryant at bat. That whole first inning started with two outs and an 0-2 pitch to Bryant. It was a third straight breaking ball that Tom was threw to him, and he was all over it. So I think when they wait for their pitches, when they're the right sort of aggressive and they're not chasing out of the zone, they wait for their pitch, this team's dangerous. But I love the Schwarber in the two-hole move. It just creates such
two-hole non-baseball fans. That means he's hitting second.
And he said, it's just such an overwhelming lineup for a starting pitcher to start a game with a tough at-bat against Dexter Fowler almost every time. And then you got to go Schwarber, Bryant, Rizzo, Zobrist, and then Russell right after that. I mean, that's tough for any pitcher. I don't care who it is. I don't care if you're the best pitcher on the planet at the moment. That's gonna be tough for you, and it's going to be tough for Corey Kluber tonight.
And Corey Kluber, again, pitching on short rest. Short rest meaning, yeah.
Well, he's done it once in the series and did it very effectively. Can he come back and do it again?
He's really good.
Win three World Series games.
Yeah. I think this one could go 40, 50 innings. I think we could be there till dawn.
We'll be on the air then. Yeah, the game will still be there till dawn.
When pitchers aren't pitching and they're resting them, do they literally do nothing?
They sit in a giant massaging chair. And they have people come over and fan them with palm fronds.
Oh, and they don't even answer their cell phone, right?
No texting. Texting. As a matter of fact, they have text jackets they put on to keep them warm
like
so they can text. No, they don't throw. Yeah, they don't throw. Well, it's going to be a heck of a game seven. Do you have any demanding questions of Kevin?
Well, here's just one kind of concern.
Oh, boy.
Tonight, forecast for Cleveland, 100% chance of rain. And the forecast for tomorrow, 100% chance of rain.
This is the kind of torture that Cub fans don't need.
Right?
It's not enough that we have game seven now. Now the game's going to get rained out.
Yeah, this is true.
Double rain out till Friday.
Yeah, you're going to be there for like three more days, Kev.
Yeah, maybe I will see the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I got some time to kill here. I didn't even know rain was in the fall. I thought we were going to have some similar weather to last night, which was perfect, by the way.
Yeah, it was great here yesterday. Normally Cleveland gets what we get a day later, so I'm surprised with the rain as well.
Great.
All right, Kev, do your fancy broadcaster close.
Live from Cleveland, Kevin Powell, WGN Sports.
All right, nicely done by you. Yeah, that was good. That wasn't bad. 6:29, Kev's on all day, of course, including with, who's the guy that does the afternoon show?
Rokan.
Rokan, you say?
Mm-hmm.
Can't be his real name. Rokan with Anna and Kevin and Zippity Doodah Padre Medic.
Or Pomegranate is what they call her.
Yeah, she'll be on as well. 6:29. Let's do this. Take a break. We'll come back and continue the festivities of show number 768 at Cochran Show on Twitter. Steve Cochran Show on Facebook. 312-981-7200. Phones and texts, and you know how to get a hold of us. 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I love this country. I think we already are great. Now I think we can be greater. And you know, I am sick and tired of the negative, dark, divisive, dangerous vision and behavior of people who support Donald Trump. It is time for us to say no. We are not going backwards. We're going forward into a brighter future.
She's the devil. He made a deal with the devil. It's true.
Benny Hill wouldn't accept the nonsense that's going on in this campaign. 6:42, we take a break from Cubs fever to check in with the great Paul Coit, standing by live in London. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
Steve, I am watching what's going on in your country extremely closely with a wry smile, wondering what on earth is going on. I mean, is there more excitement still to come before the big day?
I don't know that excitement is the word we'd use anymore. It's more fatigue and nausea. Now you've had Theresa May as your new prime minister for a couple of months. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're doing okay. I mean, the thing is, you know, she's not exactly a Donald Trump or a Hillary Clinton, to be honest with you. You know, she's just kind of settled into it. And it still seems a bit weird when we say about Prime Minister being Theresa May. I don't know. It's not the big thing. There's more, actually, about what's going on in your country than there is here, to be honest with you.
All right, so what are people saying? What are people... you are a number one ally. Our BFFs, London, England, the UK, our BFFs. What are you saying about our election, and what are you concerned about?
I mean, really. I mean, to be honest with you, the Donald Trump thing, everybody is just like, what? And surely this, no, really? And then we're looking, and then we're still getting the updates of the polls saying that that he's now neck and neck. Is that right? Is that possible?
No. No, but, it's closer. It's absolutely closer, but it's not neck and neck, no.
Okay. Okay. Well, people are very confused and very worried and very bewildered, to be honest with you, looking at this man and thinking, how has it come to this? Now, is that the view there generally?
Yeah, for a lot of people. A lot of people, the view is, there's no question, and me leading this charge, how has it come to this? Sure. And it'll be broken down for 100 years if we're still in business as a country. But what is the aside from, you know, being BFFs, is there a concern that a Trump presidency would change our relationship?
I don't know whether it would actually change. Well, it's going to change our relationship one way or another. It's not like I don't think he's the thing. I think probably the thing is, if we said anything about him, that he may never speak to us again, or he may sue the country, or just be generally not very nice to us. It's just a very strange thing. It all just seems so very strange to us. I don't know how the actual relationship between us is going to go. I don't think that's going to change. But as far as he goes, people are just very confused about the whole thing.
Yeah, we are too.
They're the best two in the country, though. Are they? They're the best two you got.
No, they're not. They're not the best two. Good God, if we had the best two, we wouldn't be on the phone right now. They're not even in the team picture for the best two. They're the two.
Late to be able to go, look, let's have a rethink now, and we'll have another try, maybe in 6 months' time.
I'd like to Brexit both of them out of the country.
Paul, don't worry about Trump saying mean things about you, because I think that's how more than half of our population feels. What is your prime minister or the parliament or your elected officials, are they saying anything publicly about this at all?
No, they really are not. They're really not, because they're all hedging their bets, because obviously, whoever becomes the president, they're going to have to deal with. So they're not going to be going, ah, oh, look at him, he's ridiculous, he says too much, he goes back at everything he says, that's the piece of work. He's got crazy hair, and what's with the tan all about? They're never going to say any of this stuff. So they know that they're going to have to deal with whoever takes over as president. So they're never actually going to publicly say that. But we get the highlights. So, for example, when you get the debates, which, as far as we're concerned, you know, they get a show where you can see the debates. They're not that exciting, are they? So we get the highlights. We get the insults, the little bits and pieces.
Sure.
And so that'll do us for about 30 seconds. The rest of it, it doesn't really make much sense to us. But we just get the highlights. It's how long to go now? What, are you going to have 1 week to go?
Next Tuesday. Next Tuesday is Election Day. It goes for it literally has been going on for 2 years, 2.5, depending on how you keep score. But you literally, I mentioned this the other day, you know, when the Brits want to change a government, 60 days, maybe 90 at the outside, you know, you can flush the entire parliament if you want. Imagine if we could do that in Springfield. We can get rid of Madigan with one flush.
I get confused about how this goes. I mean, the only thing I probably nearly understand is when you say, that's it, we're now going to vote. That's all the other stuff. I don't know what all the other bits and pieces are. We all get very confused about how it works over here. But it start then getting ready for your next election is probably 2 weeks after the last one, isn't it?
Well, yeah, actually, Election Day is Tuesday. Wednesday, the candidates for 2020 declare. So they immediately start campaigning. So.
Okay. All right. Is everybody all nervous? Are people nervous or excited or anything, or just want the whole thing, for goodness sake, let's just end it now.
You know, when you first, you know, when you first fall in love, you get those butterflies of anticipation, and every day the sun comes up and it seems a little brighter and it's all puppies and rainbows. Yeah, we got none of that. Yeah. You know that feeling you get when you got a touch of food poisoning and you know it's going to get worse? That's what we feel like.
Yeah. You want to done with. You want to move on.
Say a pregnancy. Like, at first you're excited.
Having not been pregnant, yeah.
Then to go through the labor. Well,
morning sickness for 2 years, I suppose that would be the same thing.
Yeah, then the child, then for the first couple of years, is all tricky. Right. Oh, the comparisons to all, they're endless, quite frankly, endless.
Is there a British business tycoon who is obnoxious and despised, who it would frighten you to death if they ever achieved political power? Is there an equivalency there?
Well, I think the closest equivalent, strangely, is the man that hosts The Apprentice in this country. And that's the probably closest. The fact that his name's Alan Sugar, and Lord Sugar is what you have to call him because he's in the House of Lords now. And he has quite a lot to do with Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. So I've run into him quite a few times. A scary character, not quite with, I don't think, on the same level as Donald Trump, but you know, he's a similar kind of self-made businessman, and he's the sort of guy that I would imagine to be like him, but I can't see that he would then run and get as far. I just don't think it would happen here yet.
How's the Brexit thing going? You guys packed? You need boxes?
You know, it's all going to be quiet, to be honest with you. You know, everybody's expecting everything to be a disaster, and now it's like, okay, so now what? There's lots of Brexit departments and lots of Brexit people and lots of Brexit things, and apparently Brexit is going to happen, but we still haven't invoked this clause yet that says we're leaving, which apparently you're going to... You know what it's like? It's like when people say, you know what, we're going to get engaged next year. And I think, well, what's the point of saying I'm going to get engaged next year? You're engaged.
Right.
Why don't you just get engaged and then get married?
Right.
It's like getting ready, engaged to be engaged. So it's kind of like that at the moment. So we're just waiting for that to happen.
Right. Well,
we'll see what happens in your country first, because, you know, we may actually have to come and join you. But we're going to see how things work out in the next couple of days.
That's what I was just going to say. I mean, I passed the British citizenship test, and I may still need to, you know, play that card. So, you know, I mean, tell your lovely wife and children, I mean, Uncle Steve may be over sooner than later.
Well, I think we might have to start our own country. You know, there's the whole Europe thing happening. What's going on over there? Could we go off and start our own thing?
That's not a bad idea. You guys should do
then,
that.
You know, we're
going to need some land.
Good, I think so. Yeah.
Can't be an app. We actually need land. Hey, before you go, how are the Tottenham Hotspur doing? This is our favorite football club. This is the runner-up to last year's Premier Cup title. The championship was within reach. How are the Spurs doing?
Well, we did manage to actually grab defeat there from the jaws of victory at the end of last season and ended up third. But we play in the Champions League, which is the big European competition. Could be the last with what's going on, but we're in that tonight, and we play at Wembley Stadium, which is our home ground for this because our new stadium is being built. So we will have 85,000 Spurs fans tonight playing, I know, one of your favorite German teams, Bayer Leverkusen tonight.
I had the Bayern Leverkusen, and that's when the sickness started to develop, that little bit of nausea, and then Trump made it worse. What about the Premier League? How are we doing there?
Okay, not bad. Drawn a couple of beat Manchester City, who expected to win the whole title. Absolutely destroyed them. Had a couple of draws, ties, or whatever you like to call them, over the last couple of games. But huge games coming up. Arsenal, our local rivals, we play them on Saturday. And we've got Chelsea coming up, and we've got West Ham coming up, all in November. So big November, but tonight is a very big night for Spurs tonight.
It's the great Paul Coit. Not the average Paul Coit, not the fairly decent Paul Coit, the great Paul Coit.
Bless you. Thank you so much.
Your Hawks Express. We love the Hawks Express after last night. Another big Hawks win. I meant 5-1 Hawks. I said 5-1 Cubs. I meant 5-1 Hawks. Wasn't that a final last night? Was it 5-1? Yeah, I thought so. This sponsored by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. Roll it.
Down to center ice we go. The drop of the puck, and this one's underway as the Hawks control off the draw. Kane into the Flames, a left circle. Should he score? Patrick Kane put it right past Elliott. Low to the glove side. And the Blackhawks take a 1-0 lead on the Flames. You get great goaltending at one end and goal scoring at the other. 1-0 Hawks. Cross to Kane, right face off the put it in front, they score! It's Artem Anisimov! Seabrook took the puck, advances it up the right boards. Nice dish by Schmaltz ahead the mod. Over the flame line, right wing, cuts in front, he scores! What an individual play by Mott! Took the handoff from Schmaltz just inside the Hawk line. Raced into the flame zone down the right wing, leaned in on Englund. kicked the puck to his stick and slid it in behind Elliott. It's 3-1 Hawks. Elliott has skated to the Flame bench. Flames net empty. Here's Panarin with a handoff from Kane over the Flame line. Fall shoots and scores! Artemi Panarin! Left circle closes and fires. He scores! It's hammer time! Jalmerson let it rip from the top of the left wing circle. Hawks are having some fun now. It's 5-1 Hawks. And now we get a whistle-stopping play. Well, now they're going to run the clock out, and there's the horn. The Hawks win again. 3 in a row for the Chicago Blackhawks.
Doesn't get much better than a win like that. How about that? And a couple of acrobatic, very cool goals last night. I urge you to check out the Hawks highlights.
You know what's even better? The penalty kill was perfect for the second game in a row.
Yep. I said it would take a month for the chemistry to come together. It's coming together pretty fast. Yeah. Home and home with Dallas this weekend on your Hawks radio station. That's us, 720 WGN.
Guess what day it is?
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
You know, we lose, we go home. We've won 3 in a row many times this year. We like the way it lines up. We just obviously have to get through today.
High fly ball in the air to left. Cubs strike first. Tape measure shot by Chris Bryant. In the air to center. Nate Gwynn to his left. Chisholm roll. Neither one gets it. One run scores. Here comes Zobrist. Throw home. Safe as the ball gets away and Russell ends up at third. Big misplay out in right center. It's 3-0. 2-0. High fly ball to left center. At the wall. Grand slam. 7-0 Chicago.
I like this kind of party. I like this kind of party, baby.
Rizzo into right field. This ball is out of here. 9-2. This is Russell. Cubs have forced the game 7. Winning at 9-3.
Of course, we want to be the group that breaks the string, but you're probably right. It's just correct and apt that we would go 7 games.
Hey, hey, holy mackerel, no doubt about it. The Cubs are on their way. Hey,
hey, hey! You gotta lay down and die. Oh, no, not I. Well, you know that Ernie and Ronnie are driving the bus, pulling the strings. I could actually hear Santo from heaven last night. I go, Ronnie, I'm trying to go to sleep. It's 9-2. 7:14, Adam Hoge joins us live from his postgame coverage. Or are you in your jammies now?
I'm probably more jammy than I am regular clothes right now.
It's sponsored by who, Dave?
By C.J. Wilson Mazda.
All right, then. Give me your assessment of Cubs' win in Game 6 and Cubs' setup for 7.
Well, first of all, the Indians kind of imploded last night a little bit.
Right out of the gate.
That gift in the first inning. And, you know, part of me felt for Tyler Naquin last night because not only did he have that blunder in the outfield, almost multiple blunders, because there wasn't a whole lot of communication going on in the outfield for the Indians last night, but he also struck out with the bases loaded later in the game. Good for the Cubs, though, who took advantage, and that kind of really swung the game early. The matchups tonight are just so fascinating for me, because on one end you have Corey Kluber going for the Indians on short rest for the third time in this series. So I'm kind of optimistic about the Cubs' chances on him, but you have to take advantage early. He hung a couple pitches in his last start when he's coming off short rest, and the Cubs didn't really take advantage. The at-bats weren't that great. So tonight, with the way we saw the offense last night, especially the middle of the order, and Chris Bryant coming out and saying very clearly after the game, my favorite pitch is like a hanging curveball, and why wouldn't it be? So there's going to be opportunities for the Cubs early. However, Andrew Miller hasn't pitched since Saturday, so he's on a lot of rest. Cody Allen didn't pitch last night, and Brian Shaw didn't pitch last night either. So if the Cubs don't jump on Kluber early, the rest of that bullpen is very rested, and that's scary for the Cubs too.
It should be an epic Game 7. I mean, there's no reason not to believe that it's a one run, in my world, bottom of the ninth, Cubs win, where a limping Aroldis Chapman, barely able to have enough energy to make it to the pitcher's mound, somehow finds a way to strike out the last two batters and ends the game.
Well, hey, man.
You like that picture?
I love it. I love it. And I love him going, what, 9 outs tonight? 10 outs?
9 outs could kill him. 10 outs would kill him.
But it doesn't matter because he's not pitching for the Cubs next year.
That's right. Likely. If he dies, he's got the whole winter to get better.
You gave up multiple top prospects for this guy. So
right. Suck it up.
Throw his arm off. Do you guys know the most he's ever pitched in a four-day span? He threw 83 pitches once in July of 2015. He gave up one run, struck out 9 over 3 separate games in a 4-day stretch back in July of 2015. You know who he faced? He faced 2 teams in that stretch, the Indians and the Cubs.
Yeah, there you go.
Why is pitch count so important now? I mean, I know that
it's because they were trained that way. It's kids that came up were trained on a pitch okay. count, so your arm is used to a certain amount of work and not right. used to more than that.
Because I know the argument years ago was, well, you know, you can pitch every 3
you
days
can, yeah.
or whatnot.
Yeah. You could. But when you stop doing that, you train your – the only way your arm ever gets stronger is throwing a baseball.
Yeah.
That's how your arm gets stronger, to throw the baseball. And he's a big, strong fella. But 83 pitches, we've done the science here, is the same as ending up in a coal mine for 6 months. It's the same workload.
Some deep research.
Yeah, I just finished it. Just finished the study. I'm writing the paper right now. Dave, say hi to Adam Hogue.
Hi. Hey, Adam Hogue. You know, you look at the 3-6 hitters in the Cubs lineup last night, and Bryant, Rizzo, Zobrist, and Russell, 11 of 19, 3 home runs. All 9 runs batted in. They scored 8 of the 9 runs. Schwarber scored the other one. I mean, as much as we have anguished over the lack of hitting sometimes in the postseason, in the Dodger series, the 2 games at Wrigley over the weekend, until the Sunday night game, I mean, this is much more in line with what we saw all year, and maybe even better than what we saw much of the year from the Cubs.
It is, and this team just kind of has that, you know, I've multiple times in this series I've compared them to the Blackhawks. With the idea of you just kind of know eventually they're going to come around, even when things aren't going well within a series, and you're not going to count them out until, you know, that last out. And maybe that's unfortunately the way it turns out tonight, because a couple times with the Blackhawks, you give them the benefit of the doubt all the way to the very last second or overtime of Game 7, and the puck bounces the wrong way like it did against the Kings a couple years ago. But I've compared it multiple times in this series to the 2013 Blackhawks and that series they had when they were down 3-1 to the Red Wings. Once they won Game 5, I had no doubt in my mind that it was going to go to Game 7, that they were definitely going to win Game 6 in Detroit, and at least give them a chance in Game 7. And that's kind of how it sets up tonight. I mean, they have I think it's a toss-up tonight. It could go either way mm-hmm. against Kluber, but you got to love your chances with this lineup and all the things you just mentioned, Dave, with the way Bryant's hitting now, and Rizzo and Zobrist and Russell. Those 4 guys are locked in, and I just really I think if the Cubs go on to win this game tonight, the Kyle Schwarber story is stuff of legends. For him to come back the way he has, and I think you saw it last night, he completely changes the lineup when he's in there. Love Joe hitting him second in the order last night, and it just took so much pressure off the rest of those guys. You didn't even have Dexter Fowler getting on base. He was 0-for-5, and Schwarber gets a hit, he gets a walk, and he just seemed to take the pressure off the rest of those bats behind him.
It's Adam Hogue. Give me 30 seconds on the Bears week as they go into really a 2-week stretch here where they've got to somehow maintain the heat from Monday night.
Well, I liked what John Fox said yesterday, because you never want to go into the bye off some great momentum, right? You don't want to have that momentum killed. But he also said, look, it's only a 1-game win streak. So it's not like they have the greatest momentum in the world. I think it's best for them to get healthy. I still can't believe the way the offensive line pushed around that Vikings front 7 on Monday night. Never would have seen that in a million years. Did I think the Bears could get it after that bad Vikings offensive line? Yes, but the way that the Bears banged up O-line, pushed around the Vikings, that was surprising. I think this is much more the team we thought we were going to see this year that was competitive. I think there's a real chance they can carry this on in the second half of the season. The playoffs are pretty much out of the picture, but I think they're going to be much more competitive in the second half.
It's Adam Hogue. We read you where?
WGNRadio.com/Bears.
Coming up, stand by for this, and thanks, buddy. Coming up, stand by for this, David Fahrenthold from the Washington Post. Not only has Donald Trump not given any money to charity, he may not have given any money to charity. Stand by for that. /7:26 Trump supporters, listen up. Your man's got an endorsement from a newspaper. There were five newspapers on the weekend, the largest of which was the Las Vegas Journal-Review. The others, frankly, were small-town newspapers. But only five had endorsed Donald Trump until now. The official newspaper of the Ku Klux Klan has endorsed Donald Trump for president. So, I'm not sure Trump can campaign on that, but, you know, well, it's something.
Right.
Do you know about this woman who won 400, or I should say $43 million at a casino, and she got a steak dinner?
Really?
Katrina Bookman said she won $43 million in August.
Oh, and Katrina.
Katrina Bookman.
Bookmanopolis.
Took a celebratory selfie in front of the screen that said she won $42,949.
A lot of money.
$42 million.
Yeah.
I swear, a math major. $42,949,672, but was subsequently escorted from the floor and told not to return by Resorts World Casino.
Well, sure, right? I mean, they don't want her back in there. She owns it now.
Not so much. State Gaming Commission told the ABC affiliate there that it would be illegal to offer her the $6,500 the casino offered. That supposedly is what they allow on machines that malfunctions.
Oh.
The casino claimed the machine malfunctioned.
Yeah, too bad.
Bookman said the money would have meant a lot to her family. Yeah, it's $43 million. Yeah. It'll mean a lot to any family. She herself was raised in foster care and experienced homelessness as a teenager before raising four kids on her own. $42,949,672. You occasionally, once every 3 or 4 years, you hear about this. The casinos have to have some measure of protection when a machine malfunctions.
Right.
And there's no upside to this kind of bad publicity. So I don't doubt the machine malfunction, but this woman's going to get a lot of money in a lawsuit.
Oh, completely.
So whatever the settlement is, she's not going to get $42,949,672, but she's going to get a lot of money.
Lawyer up, though.
Oh, I'm sure she already has.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm guessing she's got a line of lawyers coming to her door. Let's take a break, come back, get you the big story. And then, in just a few minutes, you know, we have the green light here to do all the charitable work we want to do. And I'm proud of this show for the charitable work that we do. I have no tolerance for anybody that exploits charity.
No.
And there's a lot of people that do. I also don't have a lot of tolerance for people who have money and don't give it away or don't give their time away to some extent. You don't have to, but you got to pay it forward somehow.
Oh, yeah.
The worst people are those who claim they give and they don't. Donald Trump. David Fahrenthold from the Washington Post has done an unbelievably exhaustive study of this. And he's got a story that leads this article off, which it just, it's, well, he will tell the story here in a few minutes. And for those of you who want to write it off as a Trump hater, no, this is a legitimate non-biased reporter who did factual work on whether or not Trump is charitable on any level. We'll talk to Fahrenthold coming up about that.
And it doesn't count when you dip into the charity funds for personal use.
Yeah, where Trump spent $25,000 on a 7-foot portrait of himself from his own foundation's money and spent $12,000 from his foundation's money to get a Tim Tebow autographed helmet and jersey.
How much?
$12,000.
He might have overpaid.
$12,000.
Okay.
7:30. Back with the big story right after this on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Are you confident that the Trump Foundation has followed all charitable rules and laws?
Well, I hope so. I mean, my lawyers do it. We give away money. I don't make anything. I take no salaries. I take no any costs. I have zero costs. And a lot of money goes through the Trump Foundation into charities. It goes to charities. It doesn't go to me. It goes to charities. But I think my people do a very good job with it.
They do. I mean, he's not wrong. They do a really good job of doing it because you can't just pick up a Donald Trump portrait, a speed-painted portrait for just anything. It's going to cost you $20,000. And where's the closest money? In his wallet? No, in the foundation. And then you got, on top of that, you got, who amongst us as presidential candidates doesn't not need a Tim Tebow autographed helmet and jersey?
Well, if he wants
another $12,000.
If he wants it, though, just spend it. Don't dip into your charitable foundation. Because
No. See, you're wrong about that. It has to come from charity. People would want Donald Trump to have nice things. There's an amazing piece of reporting done by David Fahrenthold from the Washington Post. Dave joins us on the line now. This is a great story, Dave. I mean, I was amused and nauseated at the same time.
Well, that's what we shoot for.
Please tell everybody, first off, where can they see this?
WashingtonPost.com. We just yesterday, as you said, posted a picture. We finally have a picture of this $20,000 portrait that Trump bought of himself with money that was meant for charity.
Right. Because people would want him to have it. You know, they want him to. All right, so here's the deal. This the piece you did that posted over the weekend opens with a story of a children's charity. And I want you to just ask yourself, as Dave tells this story, who does this? So this is a children's charity. Pick it up from there.
Sure. This is 1996. And really, I would not have believed this story if I hadn't seen pictures of it. In 1996, there's a children's charity in Manhattan that's having a ribbon cutting for a new nursery school they've built for children with AIDS. And on the dais at the front of the thing, there is the Mayor Giuliani, ex-Mayor Dinkins, Frank and Kathy Lee Gifford, who've given a bunch of money to build this nursery. And they've saved a seat up on the dais, a place of honor, for this developer, Stephen Fisher, who's given a lot of money to build this nursery. Trump has given nothing to this nursery. He's never given a dollar to the charity. He's not invited. He shows up anyway, and he actually goes up to the front of the stage and takes the seat that has been saved for this other guy, for this developer who was actually a donor. So when the ceremony starts, Trump is sitting in the seat. So he sings "This Little Light of Mine" with all the little children. He watches as Giuliani cuts the ribbon. He dances the Macarena with the children. He does everything that all the big donors do. And if you're sitting in the audience watching, or if you're seeing a picture in the newspaper, you think, wow, Donald Trump must have been a big donor to this organization. And everybody there is thinking, what the heck is he doing? But they think, well, he must. This is weird that he's crashed our charity event, but he must be about to leave a big check on his way
right,
out.
No. Right.
He leaves, gives nothing, no explanation, no donation. He's just gone.
And of course, the foundation and the people around it and the Trump campaign faced with this, have they commented at all to you, or have they just flat denied it?
So I sent them more than 70 specific questions for this story that ran over the weekend, some of them about specifics of that event that we just described, other ones really big, like what was the last time he gave to charity before this year? What's the great charitable cause of his life? They didn't respond to any of them. All they did was, after the story posted, they sent me a short statement saying, Donald Trump has given tens of billions of dollars to charity over his lifetime, which I can find no evidence is true, and I've been looking for months.
I want people to hear this. I want look at David's not telling you don't vote for Trump. He's telling you pay attention to the factual reporting of the character of a man who wants to be the next president of the United States, who danced with little children at a charity event to raise money for a nursery school for kids with AIDS, and didn't leave a dime and walked out. Who does that? Who does that?
So one of the other donors watching this happen, she said, "What is wrong with you, man?" That was her question after it was over.
Okay, in 2014, we all did the ice bucket challenge. This is one of my favorite parts of your story, too, David. We all did the ice bucket challenge. We did videos. We gave $25, $50, whatever we could. Trump gave. Well, do you want to tell the story, David? How he had the two Miss Universe.
Yeah, tell the ice bucket challenge. Yeah.
Yeah, so Trump does the ice bucket challenge on the roof of Trump Tower. He has two Miss Universe or Miss USA contestants, so a pageant that he owns. They pour a big icy bucket of Trump water. So before they pour the water, you can see them showing the Trump brand on the water bottles. He makes a big video of it, puts it on YouTube. It gets like 2 million views. Great for Trump's brand building because it promotes his building and his tower and him as a charitable guy.
His water.
The question is, does he give? Does he give money? That's what everybody else does as part of this.
Everybody. Everybody.
So the Trump Foundation, that's the one part of his giving that is public record. There's no gifts to the ALS Association, which is the people that were supposed to benefit from these things. Now, it's possible Trump gave out of his own pocket, but he won't answer questions about that, and the charity has no comment about whether they got anything from him. Trump could release them to say whatever he gave them, but he hasn't.
That's the rest of this. That's the Donald Trump, if David Fahrenthold is wrong, if Dave's wrong about any of this reporting, You know, you stand up, Dave, and you say to me, Steve Cochran, you don't give a dime to charity. You don't do anything to charity. I'm going to come out and show you exactly what I've done to prove you wrong. You've got no proof whatsoever.
And I've been calling, I've been asking them for it since May. I mean, that's the crazy thing about this is if they're, you're right, if they had evidence, if he'd given it to charity, even a little bit, they could have put it out there and you know, would have really changed the nature of my reporting. But they haven't. They've, you know, we're a few days before the election and they still haven't.
I'm going to do a deep dive on this thing tomorrow, even though I hate that phrase, deep dive, more than I hate at the end of the day. But for people who really, really, really hate Hillary Clinton, and they go, there's no way I could vote for Hillary Clinton, I really want you to consider the character of Donald Trump that you're considering voting for, or maybe you've made a decision to vote for him next week. Because literally, regardless of whether you believe the Clinton stuff or not, and she's made tons of mistakes, and I never thought I'd be in a position where I might have to vote for her, ever. But the fact is, everything Trump accuses Hillary Clinton of, he's done. And he's done either at an equal or worse level. So exactly what are you replacing Hillary Clinton with? Somebody with less experience and a short temper who also has committed the same crimes you're accusing Hillary Clinton of doing. And this charity thing, I have such a short fuse for this, Dave. And I don't know, as you found more and more of this, at some point it has to go beyond reporting. You just got to be disgusted by it.
Well, I have to say, I'm always sort of surprised. I thought that I had reached a level where Trump's behavior and what he was saying, you know, what he did about charity could not surprise me. But some of the things in this most recent story really did surprise me. If you'll indulge me, there's one other story I thought was really funny to tell. So Trump has, in the 80s, his wife is a big, Ivana at the time, was the chairwoman of a big gala. And so Trump, to avoid having to give more money out of his own pocket, sends one of his employees out, Barbara Ress, one of his high-ranking employees, to lean on contractors to give to Ivana's gala. Well, a few years later, Barbara Ress, the woman who's always been kind of the bag woman for Trump, he's going out and getting this money, she wins an award. And so now she has a gala that she's being honored at, and she asks Trump for money. She says, okay, I've been doing all this work for you all these years, getting charity money for you. Now it's my turn. Can you give something for my gala? Can you buy a table? Can you buy a sponsorship? Well, Trump pays nothing. He shows up at the gala and buys one ticket for himself at the door. He pays $100 just to get in and then demands the microphone. And so he gives a 15-minute speech, mostly about himself, and doesn't give anything to the charity of this woman who's been spending her whole life raising money for his charity. That was one of the things that also surprised me.
And see, you know, and there's an extension off that story, too, which I think is pertinent, too. As you become a grown man, you may have two or three or four close friends that you count on. You know, men don't collect friends. You've got two or three guys that are your guys, right? If you got 50 guys, you got a problem at home. Donald Trump doesn't have guys. Donald Trump has people who are indebted to him or his family. That's it. Donald Trump doesn't have a circle of people who will stand up and vouch for him. And if you've paid attention to the Frontline piece that ran and is still running, if you've paid attention to anything the news networks have done by way of a documentary, you see that these are more than character flaws. This is a bad guy. This is a clinically bad, bad dude that's not a compliment. He's not a bad hombre. He's a bad person. Because this all starts again with where we started this discussion. A children's charity for little kids with AIDS. He doesn't leave a check. He goes and takes the photo op, pretends he's a good guy, takes a seat of an actual donor, and leaves. Who does that? That's who Donald Trump is. And Dave, I got to tell you, it's tremendous reporting. And, you know, the ridiculousness of the FBI stories in the last, 5 days may have watered it down a bit. But you should be proud of this because people need to know. In the same way, by the way, that the Washington Post story done by a couple of your colleagues on Clinton Inc. and the Clinton Foundation need to be known as well.
That was a great story. That's right.
David, I like the fact that you took pictures of all your notes with all the legal pads. That's fantastic.
Yeah, you have to.
Starting from number one.
Well, I got to find a way to make my futility look interesting. You know, I spent months and months looking for Trump's charitable giving and haven't found it. So, you know, how do you make nothing look like something?
Right. That's
just incredible. Incredible. And nice work by you. And I look forward to talking to you again, Dave.
Thanks. Talk to you all soon.
All right, there you go. Dave Fahrenholz from the Washington Post.
I'm glad you said that because this is great reporting. He even looked at not just charity organizations, but, you know, when you get married, obviously you give a little donation to the church.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
No.
No, Donald Trump seems to exist in a world where everybody should be glad he's there so he doesn't have to pay a thing. Listen, there are no words. I've been saying it for a year and a half with a lot of words. There really are no words.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
Dean Richards live at Channel 9. And, of course, Dean continues the biggest story that we have, and that is that your mom's showing up for your live show out at Tree Time.
Cubs Schmubs. My mom's coming to a broadcast.
And you've worked out all the details?
Yeah, everything is all set. I don't think she's going to be cooking for 200 people this time.
Why?
Lazy.
Exactly. Walk it off, Mom.
Lazy. 93 years old. Come on. Snap to it.
Dean, I get tired. I get tired.
did my mother become Jewish all of a sudden?
Well, that's the closest
I've
got. Dean.
Hi, I'm tired.
Don't mind me. I'll sit out here in the yard.
I got to go make some baklava and yogurt.
If you say hello when you come by, that'd be nice. I'll be in the yard.
If not, I'll probably be dead.
Oh, it's
my
funny.
Mother does this all the time. No matter what you're talking about,
yeah,
she'll bring up that I'll be dead soon anyway.
My mother started this. My mother's 70 something, and she started it. And I'm going, what are you talking about? Right. You're not going anywhere.
Yeah, she brings it up. It's like, well, so my cousin is going to drive her out there on Sunday to the Tree Time in Lake Barrington.
I'll be in your cousin's car.
So pick you up and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, hopefully everything will be okay. It's like, I'm more likely to take a bullet in the head before anything happens to her.
Yeah, she's going to be fine. She's going to outlive all of us.
Iron Maiden, right?
Yeah, so absolutely. You know, I had a grandmother who every time I got on a plane said, I hope the plane doesn't crash. And you know what I always said to her? Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Can't argue with you.
Cheery. It's cheery.
All right, so we got some more celebrity Cubs chiming in. Who's tweeting now?
My favorite, Bob Newhart tweets after all the Cubs game, and he holds up his W flag. Last night, he's with Don Rickles, and you got a Newhart and a Don Rickles holding up the W flag.
No, that's great.
And Newhart says, I got the fella at the next table, or as Newhart would put it, I. The fella at the next table was nice enough to help me hold up the flag after right. The Cubs won. Go Cubs, fly the W.
Yeah, this will tell you how old Bob and Don are now. They can't hold the flag up.
What else do we have? Nick Offerman, the comedian.
Spent a lot of time here in Chicago.
Yeah, yeah.
He's an actor here.
He's
Didn't Offerman live with Nick DiGilio for a while? Remember that story about Nick where Offerman lived in a closet?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so
put the bed in the closet, wasn't it?
No, it was a mattress. There was a walk-in closet. There was no room in the apartment. And somebody had a walk-in closet that Nick Offerman had a mattress on the floor, and they had a cat. And the litter box was in the closet as well on the other
end. Sounds nice.
Yeah.
I know he's married to Megan Mullally now.
Yeah.
Karen from Will and Grace. I don't think I told you last week that there is some talk that they may be based on the enormous popularity of the Will and Grace political internet thing.
That 10-minute deal they did.
That they may be bringing back episodes of Will and Grace, some new episodes of Will and Grace. They're talking about that right now based on how well that went over.
I think that was such a great show.
It was a good show.
Great show.
And the two biggest stars were Megan Mullally and
right.
Sean Hayes.
Yeah. No, it's all good. And they obviously still have all the chemistry. So hopefully that'll happen. But Joe Mantegna tweeted last night after Addison Russell's Grand Slam. Jim Gaffigan last night tweets, I'm too superstitious to say anything about the game, but the 8-year-old in me will be rooting for the team that only used to play during the day.
You know, that's nice of Jim to take time away from a hot pocket to tweet that. That's very nice of him, especially a guy from Indiana. Of course, you know, if you're in Indiana, you got to pick the Sox or the Cubs. But I think probably, aren't there just geographically, Dave, aren't there more Sox fans in Indiana than Cubs? Because, you know, it's a little closer.
I'm not sure about that. I mean, the Cubs fans tend to kind of cover this area, and then around Peoria, it sort of splits between Cubs and Cardinals.
Yeah, that's true.
And the Sox are kind of interspersed around.
Don't they have separate toll booth lanes as you go further downstate?
Yeah, they do, actually.
If you're a Cubs fan, left two lanes. If you're a White Sox fan. But I think Jim is one of those fans. Like, he roots for the Chicago teams because he lived in this area for such a long time. Just like Common, who is a Sox fan, you know, born and raised on the South Side, but he was on Seth Meyers last night.
Northwestern graduate, Seth Meyers.
Seth asked Common about being a White Sox fan with all of this going on with the Cubs.
I know you're a White Sox fan. Yes. Can a White Sox fan root for the Cubs in a time like this?
Yes, a White Sox fan has to root for the Cubs.
Okay.
Even though it's some hardcore White Sox fans who will not root for the Cubs and root against
them. But you are trying to bridge this gap.
I'm bridging this gap. You know, I'm about unity. And Chicago. I'm from Chicago. I want to see the Cubs win. 100 years.
Yeah.
100 years.
More and more. We're hearing that. Sox fans that are still Sox fans, but they're now rooting for the hometown team, the Cubs.
It's good luck. Yeah. It's in a time of terrible news everywhere. Yeah. It's great news for the city if they pull this. It's already great news, but it's great news for the city if they pull this off.
The Cell has on their marquee, congratulations to the Chicago Cubs with the Cubs logo on it, which I think was a very classy.
It's very nice.
Do you mean guaranteed rate park it's called?
Yes, Dean Wright.
The sign actually
with the downward arrow. Did you see their logo?
Yeah,
it has a downward arrow. Could they have picked a more awful logo?
Well, that's the logo. That's the logo.
I know,
company,
but
right, lower rates, but it doesn't translate real well.
It'll always be Kaminsky.
Yeah,
not good.
By the way, the sign you mentioned that's nice for the Cubs toggles with "F off Cub fans."
yeah. Hashtag.
I like to think of that sign whenever I'm wearing my Cubs hat and somebody says the Cubs suck. I'm a White Sox fan.
Dean, hey, I saw you wear your Cubs hat for one of your junkets, too.
I did. That was the day after that we wrapped up the Dodgers series, and I was out in L.A.
But cocky Cub fans, you got to be careful. The White Sox actually won it, in case you missed it, and you could have because some didn't cover it in 2005. So until they get it done, that's all I'm saying.
I don't know why we just can't root for everybody. That's all I'm saying.
Well, hey, look, get serious. We can't root for everybody.
One way or the other, this is going to be over tonight. Tomorrow.
Wait. You think it's going to be over tonight? The forecast for Cleveland, 100% rain tonight and tomorrow.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a little breaking news. 100% rain for tonight and tomorrow. We could be in this la-la land until Friday.
So you mean to tell me that it possibly then, no matter what happens with the weather, the World Series game could be played on election night?
Dean, please. We haven't taken our blood pressure medication yet. Please.
How funny would that be?
Oh, one life-changing event at a time.
That's my point being this, that the World Series is going to be over. And in the next couple of days, we have to go back to start talking about the election.
Yeah.
And, so enjoy it while we can.
Well, unlike that cute little TV show you're doing, I'm still doing both.
Well, that's true. That's very true.
I got it covered.
You are a man of all topics.
I can't stand Mike Madigan. I can't stand Donald Trump. I got both parties covered.
You do. You've got everybody mad at you. I respect that in you.
Oh, all right. We come back. Who's a special girl? He's Irish. Stand by for that. Val Kilmer news, which appears to be good news. And we got something we need to plug, which is important, too. And then maybe we'll wrap it up with a little lyric opera sound. So stand by for that. More of Dean live from Channel 9 in a moment. Keep your pants on, Dean. We're back after this.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richer, the entertainment editor.
826, back to Dean. You know, your producer Bennett's in studio, Dean, and Sunday when I called your show to say hi, Bennett told me I couldn't get on. And then thankfully you told him, no, put him on, it's okay, I won't keep him long. But Bennett's written a blog about his mugging, which we would alert people to. Bennett, where do we find it?
That will be on the Steve Cochran Show page on WGN Radio and the Steve Cochran Show blog on WGN Radio.
I had one physical altercation with someone, which ended with the police happened to be in the parking lot, and they pulled a gun on me.
Yeah, but he doesn't work here at WGN anymore.
Yeah, no, that wasn't physical. That would have ended well, not badly, I should say, for them.
Fortunately, those people don't run the station anymore.
But has anybody here been mugged other than Bennett?
No.
I never have.
God,
no. Nope. And Dean's walking the streets all the time.
I've mugged people, but I've never been mugged.
Yeah, Dean's been walking the streets for years. I mean, he used to be for profit. Now he's just to get from here to there.
You've right. mugged for the cameras.
I mug for the cameras every day.
Anyway, Bennett, it's good that you're writing about it because then people can learn from your experience.
Now, Bennett, have you taken my advice and stopped wearing that T-shirt? Somebody please mug me.
I put it away in the back of my closet. You know, I figured it might be useful one day. But, yeah, for now, I decided I should probably hold off on this for a little while.
What seemed whimsical at one time, you know, now is...
No, not so funny.
It turned ugly. You know?
It's kind of a time saver, too, if you just have T-shirts printed with your cell phone password on
it. Yes, that's very true. So, you know, I just, you know, kind of show them a little bit and then... Yeah. They go on their way. One less punch.
And maybe like a subscript on the shirt that says, my wallet's in my right hip pocket, that kind of thing.
You know, expedite the process.
Yeah, save some time.
Yeah.
Again, WGNRadio.com. You're very lucky, and he handled it extremely well.
Yeah.
So, and you should have seen the guy's fist after Bennett kept hitting his fist with his face. Mm-hmm. I mean, that guy's fist is in bad shape today.
Yeah, real just about as purple as my face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you held up well, dude. Still
it's
got
coming.
It going for you.
The color's coming.
I'm surprised they could have reached his face. He's like 7'2" or something.
Yeah.
How tall are you?
Bit of an egomaniac, though. He kept yelling, not the face, not the face. I go, come on, dude.
Wow. We are in radio.
Yeah, what are you, 6'4"?
6'5".
6'5", okay. Yeah, me too. All right, who's a pretty girl, Dean?
The pretty girl is U2 frontman Bono, who you might expect to get a nice honor, like Woman of the Year from very prestigious magazine. The
really shocked Trump didn't get this.
Glamour magazine has honored Bono and made him their first male Woman of the Year for his one campaign, which is a campaign against poverty, especially for women and girls denied education. But the magazine editors say that some men get it, and Bono is one of those guys.
I think it's cool. It's a smart way to get pub for the deal, too, but I think it's cool. It's a
very
nice thing.
Very cool. I like it.
I'd like to be Woman of the Year.
Well, you are in my eyes.
Yeah, I was going to say, both of you are in our eyes.
Val Kimmer. Kimmer? Who's Kimmer? Val Kilmer's okay?
When you got married to Jimmy Kimmel? You mean that?
Yeah, I'm mad at Jimmy Kimmel.
Why?
Nah, I don't want any more kids crying on the Halloween thing. It's not funny.
It's a little bit funny.
No, it's not funny. You and Sandberg ought to talk. You and Sandberg think it's hilarious. It's not funny. Sandberg's going to spend an hour at 10 knocking over strollers on Michigan Avenue if you want to come over.
You know, children have to learn pain early in life, Steve.
Otherwise, therapists wouldn't have work.
You know, as my dad used to say, and you know how good I turned out, pain builds character.
This is why I'm concerned.
Dean, did your mother come after you with the wooden spoon?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, mine still does.
Yeah, wooden spoon.
I like how you two are citing these as good examples.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Bedroom slipper was another favorite.
Yeah.
And to this day, if I see a man reaching anywhere in his belt area, I run.
Yeah. I'm told Sandberg's starting a new party to ruin children's birthday parties.
They dress up like scary clowns.
That sounds fun.
All the goodie bags for the other kids say, get out, your parents don't love you.
That sounds delightful.
Yeah.
So Val Kilmer went on his Facebook page yesterday, a day after one of his ex-co-stars, Michael Douglas, came out and said that Val Kilmer has oral cancer, the same kind of cancer that Michael Douglas had. And said that it was not looking good for Val Kilmer. Yesterday, Val Kilmer posts on his Facebook page that he hasn't talked to Michael Douglas in a couple of years, and that while he respects him greatly, he's 100% wrong on that, and says that he does not have cancer.
What a weird thing for Michael Douglas to say.
The whole thing is weird. Kilmer said that he asked Michael Douglas, he was having some throat trouble several years ago, and asked him, if he knew a doctor, ear, nose, and throat doctor, and Douglas gave him a referral, but he said that's all he ever asked Michael Douglas. That was the extent of.
It's just weird.
The involvement.
There's a piece of that story that's missing, but we're glad he's okay and says okay for now.
Apparently okay.
Veterans concert at Rosemont when?
This is going to be, I think, pretty fun. It's going to be Saturday, November the 12th.
Okay.
It's called America Salutes You, a very special concert for military, for veterans, for their families. And Cyndi Lauper will be part of this. Gavin DeGraw, Wanda Jackson, Hoodie Allen. CeCe Winans, Ricky Skaggs, the list goes on and on, including Jim Cornelison, who will be doing the national anthem at this event, Bring the House Down, as he always does. Chicago Fire's David Eigenberg, and all of our friends, Tom Dreesen, is going to be hosting the big event. It's going to be, again, Saturday, November 12th at the Rosemont Theater.
Information where?
Tickets available at americasalutesyou.org or Ticketmaster. And we're going to be broadcasting that concert here on WGN-TV on Thursday evening, Thanksgiving evening, which is a Thursday, at 8 p.m.
Yeah, we're still doing Thanksgiving on Thursdays.
That's what I've been told.
And finally, the Lyric Opera salutes the Cubs. Does this need a setup?
These guys are just so into it. We had some of the singers on with us the other day, and then the brass section yesterday put this little ditty together.
This is why your mother wants you to practice your oboe. You could be this someday.
Go Cubs!
Nice. Very well done.
Cool from those
very
guys.
Well,
Lyric Opera brass section.
All right, buddy. Talk to you later.
Bye.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
In a newly released email, John Podesta has been caught saying, we have to dump all of those emails. Can you believe this? That's WikiLeaks. And he also said, to me, this made a big statement, John Podesta, I tell you what, if he worked for me, I would fire him so fast. He is such a nasty guy. I would fire him like The Apprentice. John, you're fired.
Gosh, he sure is great. 8:43, Chris Freights joins us. The great Freights from CNN, and you can read Chris Freights on CNN. You can see him and hear him on CNN, whether you listen or watch, and frankly, he's the best thing on the network. Blitzer's done. Time for Wolf to call it a day. Nah, I like Wolf. He's been a pal for years.
he's a good dude. What's up, Steve, man? How about those Cubs? What a game. I was pulling for you guys.
Yeah, we hadn't noticed. It's a fairly big news here, as you can imagine. But you know what we just saw? As a matter of fact, we got to get on. Who's doing the weather at Channel 9 this morning? Is it Tim? Is Tim doing the weather? See if Tim could jump on Ryan with us maybe about 8:55 or so just to see. Because, Chris, here's the deal. 100% chance of rain in Cleveland tonight and tomorrow. Ooh. Can you imagine to have to wait 2 days for Game 7?
We've waited 108 years. No, we can wait one more.
So,
right, Chris?
No, you guys got the momentum right now. I mean, like, that was a crushing win. Like, to go into tonight with that confidence, to feel like, oh, we're going to close this. We're coming to the comeback kids. We're going to make this happen.
Yeah.
That 2 days, that's going to cool it, man. It's going to put your guys on.
Nah, you got to get it over. And you know what? You got to get it over with. All right. So, speaking of getting it over with, we still got to wait till next Tuesday for this election to be over. At least we think it'll be over on Tuesday. I am amazed with the polling seeming to indicate that the FBI story of last Friday, which is a non-story, that we continue to see polling say it's not changing many votes, but Trump is getting tighter and more competitive in just about every state.
Yeah, so this is interesting, right? Because the Clinton people expected some tightening. They didn't expect kind of those, you know, 9-point margins that we saw a little bit earlier in the month. They never did, and they had kind of always cautiously, optimistically said, it'll tighten, but we'll still win. So a couple things to watch, right? Those polls are, in fact, tightening. But when you go inside those polls, you go down from the top lines into what they call the crosstabs in the nerdy pollster speak, right? And you look at, you know, some of the questions, 6 out of 10 people saying this doesn't really change their opinion. 3 out of 10, so 30%, saying, you know, this does make them less likely to vote for Hillary Clinton. But remember, this kind of whole email scandal is baked into what people think about Hillary Clinton already. And it wasn't such a bombshell on the order of Trump's Access Hollywood tape that it really kind of changed the game, or it wasn't as if the FBI director came out and said, she's guilty, right? So it was muddy enough where you could see her being able to say, well, they have some emails. We're confident they're not going to say anything new. And Trump saying, of course, it's going to show she's a crook, right? And so people kind of taking, you know, the he said, she said into account there. But the other piece of that is look at the electoral map, right? So that 270, and we've talked about this a lot, right, Steve? But the idea that she has way more paths. You know, he needs to win Ohio. He needs to win Florida. He needs to win Pennsylvania. He needs to win New Hampshire. You know, some of those places he's close. Ohio, he's close. Florida, he's close. New Hampshire, he's down by 5 or 6. Pennsylvania, he's down 6 or 7. So, like, he needs to flip. Not only does he need to win the swing states that are truly swing right now, but he needs to flip a couple lean Dems. That's why you've seen him in Wisconsin and Michigan. He went to Maine this week. You know, trying to pick up every last electoral vote he can because he needs to have a flawless performance on election night. His path is so narrow that he can't lose one state and still get to the White House.
Are the Trump people at all concerned about him making a speech or saying something off the cuff, as he's done for 2 years now, that could really damage them in the last few days? Or are they going, look, what are we going to do? He's Trump.
Yeah, Trump is Trump. Let Trump be Trump. That's what you hear from the Trump people when you talk to him. That's typically the answer when he says something that's rather outlandish. And they say, you know, they kind of just shrug their shoulders and say, well, we got to let Trump be Trump. He has been more disciplined.
Yep,
and
no doubt.
The Clinton email story really gave him a spark when he needed it. It gave him a breath of new life. And he's been able to kind of focus his attacks on Hillary much more effectively, and he's not wandering off in the desert. And that is part of what the Clinton people were able to do so successfully through the debates and through much of this late part of the campaign, is have him explaining. And when Donald Trump explains, he over-explains, right? He tells you all about whatever the current scandal is and all about why it's not true, as opposed to saying there's some allegations out there, they're not true, let me return to attacking Hillary Clinton. So they're really trying, the Clinton folks are really trying to put this back on the Donald Trump and make the case that he's not fit, that he should not be president, and that, you know, they're grabbing onto these stories that also haven't kind of bubbled up to the top, you know, out of, you know, that he's not as charitable as he says he is, or that he used tax maneuvers that even his own tax counsel said this is probably legally dubious, you know, to avoid taxes, hitting him on that idea that he's the first candidate in 40 years not to put out their tax returns. So everybody's kind of returned to message in these last couple of days. And, you know, the question is, does it really change any minds? Most people at this point in the race have decided. So the other piece of this that we're not talking about, Steve, get out the vote. And the Clinton and Democratic campaigns have much more infrastructure there than Trump and the Republicans.
Chris, which state do you see being the most polarizing this time? I know Florida, we had the 2000 with the hanging chads, Ohio 2004. Which state do you see being the big one this time?
Well, certainly, Andrea, all the road to the White House has consistently run through Ohio. It's predicted the president for a number of years now. So I would watch Ohio, particularly because the polls there are tied, right? It really feels like it could go either way. As you point out, Florida, also huge. I'd also watch North Carolina. We're starting to see some early vote numbers in as well. And we're seeing in places like North Carolina, Hillary Clinton not doing as well among African Americans as Barack Obama did 4 years ago. That's not good news for her. She needs those big numbers. She needs that's her core support. She needs to get as many of those people out to vote. She's about 5 points behind where Obama was in 2012. She needs to make sure she's, you know, redoubling these efforts in the last weeks, that her get out the vote people are targeting those communities to get them to the polls. They're crucial. A piece of good news for the Democrats, though, more Latinos coming out to vote than ever in places like Florida. So that's going to be huge. That's why that race is so tight. So they're looking to get those newly registered Latino and Latina voters out, as well as the longtime registered folks in places like Miami, because that's where they're going to rise or fall. So a couple of states there, I'd look, Ohio, Florida, North Carolina, and Nevada. If you had to pick a handful of the
tracks, those are the key.
Night,
yep.
Those will tell us where we're headed.
And to go to what you said before, and I'll wrap you up with this, but the FBI story is still a non-story until it's a story. It has to be covered because it's such a strange turn of events. But the actual context of the letter and the context of when it came out is just a bizarre turn, and it said nothing. It says nothing about, oh, yeah, wrap it up. It's a criminal. She's got to go to jail. There's nothing in there like that. And until you find out, and the FBI said, we're not going to have this done by Tuesday. until you find out there's nothing there. But the media can't avoid it. You can't not talk about it. It's a story, as is the David Fahrenthold Washington Post charity story, which shows Trump to be a terrible person. My words, Chris, not yours. and the other Washington Post Clinton Inc. story about the foundation. All of these stories that actually go to who these people are, you can't get to them. There's just not enough time in the day.
Yeah, it's been amazing to watch kind of the number of scoops that have come out in this last week. And you're right, Steve, that the email stories kind of sat above them all, even though there's not a lot of there at this point. And, you know, you see Comey kind of in a rock and a hard place. You know, when he went and explained, you know, he felt like he had to explain the investigation back in July. Usually the FBI doesn't say anything if they don't charge somebody. They don't say anything about what happened, but this was a case where Comey felt like he needed to come out and say there was nothing criminal, but it was certainly careless, and it was a bad judgment. Then he got called to the Hill, and he promised lawmakers on the Hill, hey, I'll come up. If there's any new development, I'll keep you posted. He gets a new development.
Right, he had to talk.
More emails that we didn't know were out there. And he knows it's going to be explosive, but he also knows that they can't possibly go through all thousands of those emails, figure out if there's any there, if these are already emails they've seen. Are these new emails? What are they by Election Day? So if he doesn't get out there and say something, it turns out that there was an email and that's going to be a big deal after the election, then he's going to get accused of covering up. If he goes out there and says, hey, I have something, I don't know what it is, he's going to get beat up by Democrats, which is what we're seeing right now. So, you know, he was in a lose-lose and yep. his responsibilities to the FBI. So that's kind of where he ended up on this. But you're exactly right. We don't know what these things say. We don't know if they're significant or if they're just kind of more email traffic that's not going to have a bearing on anything. But it certainly created a media firestorm and an opportunity for Donald Trump to change the subject and try to go strong toward that finish line on Tuesday, Steve.
It's Chris Freitz. Best there is. Thank you for the time, as always, my friend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, thank you. We'll talk after this is all over. We'll see what happens.
Oh, man. I'm sure we'll talk to you before then. That's Chris. Follow him at Freitz all over social media. Are we going to Tim now? Is Tim standing by? Let's go to Channel 9 and the Weather Center and Tim to find out if there's a real threat to this game tonight. Tim, as you know, Tim, I was the weatherman and grumpy old men, so I have a lot of weather knowledge, as you know.
Really?
Yeah. Well, you didn't know that. Oh.
No, I didn't realize. I know you were in the movie. I didn't realize that's the part you played.
Yeah, I was the weatherman, so obviously I know this stuff. And then there's, you know, my knees get sore when it's damp. You know, uh-huh. So I have a lot going on here. Uh-huh. So we saw, the show started this morning, 100% chance of rain in Cleveland tonight and tomorrow. What are you seeing?
You did? Where did you see that?
Let's go live to Dave.
I saw it
our
on
other
a,
weather expert.
I saw it on a website. Tim.
Okay.
I would have. I always rely on the WGN Weather Center for our weather here, of course.
Right.
Is Dave drunk?
Well, the question is when isn't?
All right, Tim, what are you seeing as
no,
a real
I'm
forecast?
I'm not seeing that. I'm oh, seeing good. At the most, and it would be at the eighth or ninth inning, there's about a 20% chance.
Oh, well, what's going to happen?
Okay, yeah.
What kind of crazy website were you looking at?
It's got Country the word report? Weather in it.
Okay. Weather Channel?
Yeah.
Weather.com?
Yeah.
No, I'm seeing about 67 for the first pitch, a light breeze blowing out at Progressive Field. A lot like last night, about 3 or 4 degrees cooler. It was 71 for the first pitch last night. Unbelievable. Yeah. But cloudy, if anything does form, I think it'd be towards the end of the game. I think it'd be spotty and light, and by then we're already celebrating our winning.
Could it be tears from heaven?
Dave actually on a website called plagueoflocusts.com because he believes that could.
Yeah, there are supposed
well,
to be
hey,
locusts and other vermin
tonight. If we hope what happens happens, I don't know.
All right,
get your affairs in order, people.
The only reason we want rain in the eighth is if Cleveland's up, right? Am I right, Tim, or am I right?
You are right. We're going to be raining home runs out there.
Oh, look what you did there. Not Robles your first day.
Huh?
Not your first day.
I got to go get some sleep so I can stay up for this game.
Yeah, you and me both. All right, thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
Sure, anytime.
That's Tim, and he's got it covered at Channel 9.
Okay, I believe Tim.
But what does it say?
It still says, I just pulled this up, 100% chance of rain tonight, thunderstorms, 100% chance of rain tomorrow. I'm not making it
Is
up.
Is it weather.com?
So
is it for Cleveland or Illinois?
Cleveland,
I mean, rather Ohio?
Cleveland, Ohio, not Cleveland, Oregon.
We're going to take Dave's phone away from him. Check this out. 8:56. Coming up after 9, Troy Murray. Troy Murray will join us. Stand by for that. And we'll get our Wang Dang Doodle picks in. And Mark Carmen live from Cleveland. Stand by. All that on the way. Game 7, of course, tonight. And Carms will set that up for you as well, or he'll just talk about himself.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Kane into the flames on left circle. Shoots, he scores! Patrick Kane put it right past Elliott. Low to the glove side. And the Blackhawks take a 1-0 lead on the Flames. You get great goaltending at one end and goal scoring at the other. 1-0 Hawks.
I got carpal tunnel with a remote hand last night. I'm working a remote hard. Little Cubs. Caught the Caner goal. Patrick Kane, well, actually, Cirque du Soleil called and offered Patrick Kane a job after the goal last night.
Did he take it?
No. Oh, no, he seems to think hockey's his future.
I think that's a good call.
Hawks win 5-1. Hawks are hot. And Troy Murray joins us. Troy Murray, our friend, and John Weideman, of course, do these games. And they're not doing them for their health. So please feel free to check in every single game all season long. Courtesy of Chicago's own Nuveen. Here's my pal Troy. How much fun was that game?
That was good. I tell you what, that Patrick Kane goal and Tyler Motz goal were fantastic. Corey Crawford at the other end of the ice was just amazing. And through 40 minutes, I mean, Calgary was probably pretty disappointed that the game was, as close as it was. They were playing extremely well. And without the play of Corey Crawford and a couple spectacular individual efforts to get that momentum going on their side, where they carried away and won 5-1, it was a lot closer than the 5-1 score was for most of that game.
I would highly encourage Hawk fans, in case you were just wrapped up in the Cubs last night and couldn't break away, make sure you see the Caner goal and the Tyler Motte goal. The Tyler Motte goal was kind of a modified wraparound that ended up with Tyler Motte in the fifth row of the 100 section. I don't know how he made him. I don't know how you get your body to do that on skates.
Well, it was pretty impressive. First and foremost, you got to look at this guy. He's just coming into the NHL and he's got 9 games under his belt or whatever it is, and makes a little move like that, goes through the defenseman, kicks it up to a skate, goes around the goaltender and tucks it in the far side. That was a big goal for the Blackhawks. And, I think that everybody after that kind of got a little bit more relaxed and played a lot better. I think that was maybe the heartbreaker for the Calgary Flames too, when it's like, oh wow, that's a nice play.
Yeah,
Troy.
They were applauding.
Anisimov was a great addition last year, but he's scoring more here early in the season. Has he changed his game at all, or is it just kind of more a matter of getting accustomed to the guys he's playing with?
I think it's a combination of both. He's playing extremely well, playing with a lot of confidence. And because of the focus on him and the start that he's been off to this year, a lot of the media is talking to him. And he's saying, I feel more comfortable this year after a full year under my belt and, the surroundings. It's never easy for an athlete, especially a player who comes from a different background. He's a Russian-born player and comes over here, and there's a lot of things to factor in. To a new city. He's been over in North America for a few years, but if you listen to him, he's still not 100% comfortable with the language. But he himself said, I feel more comfortable this year, and he worked out extremely hard. He knew what to expect this year. And he's not even playing on the line the entire time with Patrick Kane and Panarin, which was so dynamic last year. But this is a guy that really studies the game hard. He's a student of the game. He watches films. He watches the great players. And he admitted this, that he at one point watched a lot of video of Pavel Datsyuk just to kind of emulate and figure out what he was doing. The guy's a low maintenance, no maintenance type of player, goes out there and does the right things. And anytime you go around the front of the net, good things are happening. And that's where he is. That's where he's been this year.
The next Hawks game is when?
Tomorrow.
And we got a
day after the celebration.
Yeah, we got a home and home with Dallas coming up.
Yeah,
there's a real test
of division games coming up. Central division games. Yeah, no Patrick Sharp. Dallas is banged up a little bit. A couple of their key players are out for an extra long length of time.
Not the face.
Patrick Sharp is.
That's my impression of every woman in Chicago. Not the face. Not the face.
No, Patrick. Patrick Sharp.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a good Dallas team, though. And when the smoke clears in the spring, expect Dallas and the Blackhawks to be fighting it out, in my opinion.
They're good. You know, the one thing, you look at the league this year, and there's a couple of surprises that you might not have thought, obviously, they were going to be in the running for, you know, the playoffs. You look at the Edmonton Oilers, if they keep going the way that they're going, somebody who's a real good team, again, is going to fall out of that picture. Minnesota's off to a great start. Dallas, even though they are banged up, have one of the best offenses in the NHL. And, you know, they'll get things straightened out and turned around and heading in the right direction. It's going to be a dogfight, and I'll tell you, any team doesn't want to go through a prolonged slump, because if you're going to try and chase the score, if you're going to try and chase the standings this year, it's going to be dangerous. And for the Blackhawks, they're getting themselves a little bit of a cushion here, which you didn't see at the beginning, losing the first two games. But Dallas Stars are a good hockey team. Colorado is an up-and-coming team that you're going to see tomorrow night at the United Center. So these big games within the Central Division coming up here, 3 and 4 nights, are critical.
Last word to you, Dave Ennett.
Well, remember when the Blackhawks were last in the division a couple of weeks ago, and they got off to the 0-2 start? But as of last night, they are now tied with the Minnesota Wild for first place in the Central.
Yep.
And teams that, like St. Louis, got off to that hot start, they've cooled off a bit. Dallas, Troy, as you mentioned, they're beat up. They've lost 3 in a row. It's Nashville's in last place.
Right.
So, I mean, it's kind
of... You can't expect that to last either.
Yeah, you don't expect that to last, but really, it's going to be... Is there a better division as you look around the league?
I don't think so, top to bottom, and that's kind of the scary thing. And if you look at, as you mentioned, Dave, a team like Nashville, they're struggling, but you know that they're better than what the record is. But they're putting themselves in a tough position here. And for the Nashville Predators making the big trade, picking up P.K. Subban from the Montreal Canadiens, sending longtime captain and all-world defenseman Shea Weber up north across the border, expectations are extremely high. And, you know, all of a sudden you get those expectations and all of a sudden the pressure starts to build and you don't get off to a tremendous start. And now you're fighting a little bit. Everybody's looking at you. The intensity magnifies. So it's going to be interesting to see how Nashville reacts, but they're a good team. The Winnipeg Jets are a better team this year. You look at Minnesota, Colorado. I mean, this is the best division in hockey, and it's going to be a dogfight within the division to see where everybody ends up at the end of the year. You just, again, you can't afford to have any kind of a downturn and think that it's going to be okay, because I don't know if it is this year.
It's Troy Murray. There's nobody better than Troy and John. But let me ask you.
You know what? I like the fact, by the way, that you called me your friend.
Well, we are friends. We are friends. Wait. Aren't we?
We are now, for sure.
Question for you, though, before you go, in light of the Cubs mania going on. What goes through an athlete's head on the morning of a Game 7?
Boy, I tell you, Game 7s are a different animal, and everybody knows that all bets are off. Throw everything out the window. You know, if you're a starting pitcher, if you're a bullpen guy, if you're on, everybody has to be involved. I think it's the best moment in sports is a Game 7.
Yep.
Because every pitch, every play is just the intensity in all of those is incredible. And for these players, you know, tonight coming into this game for Cleveland and Chicago, some of them have been there a little bit in the past. Some of them have not been there at all. And you're going to be on the biggest stage in sports tonight. And Joe Quenneville said maybe the biggest day in history in sports in Chicago coming up here tonight. I don't even know if these guys at this point realize it, because if you can kind of soak in all the how big this moment is, I don't even know if you could wrap your hands around it. But there's no doubt that these guys are going to have a lot of nerves. And once the game starts, those nerves will calm down a little bit and you get focused into the game. But coming up to the game tonight, I would hardly think that most of these guys slept very well last night. And the butterflies will be churning in your stomach all day long until you get to the ballpark.
Well, it's going to be fun. We happen to remember a few Game 7s on skates, and those are fun too. Some more painful than others.
It's the best, but you know what is? It is the agony of defeat and thrill of victory. It's what it's all about.
Yeah.
One team, unfortunately, a real good team tonight, is not going to be celebrating. And they've earned everything they've got to get to this point, but there's going to be a loser and there's going to be a winner. I don't know who it's going to be, but I hope it's from the Chicago land area.
Be awfully nice, wouldn't it? And, of course, then we have to get back to the election. So the longer we can prolong this, the better.
Hey, this was a great conversation. Why would you end it that way?
You're right. It's going to ruin my friendship with you.
As a parent or as a coach, you go in there and you criticize your child or you chastise the team, but you always ended up on a positive note. So don't end it. You got to say something positive here.
Thanks for the little tip, man. I appreciate it.
Give us the words of wisdom here, Mr.
I appreciate the words of wisdom. Cubs 3-2. Aroldis Chapman strikes out the last two batters in the bottom of the ninth. How's that for a wrap-up?
There we go.
All right, man. Thanks. It's Troy Murray, courtesy of Chicago's own Nuveen. And yes, Dave.
Artem Anisimov, by the way, is your National Hockey League scoring leader. How about that? And he's tied for the league leading goals.
It's been a very strange start.
Isn't it?
But do you think about the Hawks being tied for the lead in the division, where Kane and Taves combined goal total, I think, is 2 or 3? It's pretty good.
Not bad.
9:23. We got to do the Wang Dang Doodle picks. Stand by for that. And Mark Carmen coming up, too, live from Cleveland on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
It's been a very well-contested series. Both sides have played really good baseball. They have been outstanding pitching. They've been outstanding pitching all year. All of a sudden, our offense is having a resurgence, which we need.
It's nice to kind of build off of these last two games with the momentum. And, you know, today, obviously, with the... you know, the offense is pretty special, and then our pitching was unbelievable. So hopefully we do that tomorrow.
It's going to test both teams, I think. Tomorrow is a day that, you know, you kind of have to put it out all on the table.
.943 live from his hotel room or somewhere in Cleveland. I assume he's lying around waiting for something to happen. It's Mark Carmen. And by the way, that was Joe Mad, Bry, and Addy.
Addie.
Joe Madden.
Sounds like your kids.
Bryant and Addison Russell. What's up, man? Mark Carmen, live in Cleveland.
Steve.
Mark Carmen, live in Cleveland.
I'm here, and I'm in the parking lot, Steve, of the Holiday Inn Express. Beautiful parking lot.
Why are you in the parking lot? Are you going or coming?
No, I am. Well, I'm here. I just have been walking around the structure for a couple hours now, just trying to, you know.
He's pacing again. Yeah. He was pacing in Chicago before he left.
You're walking around a Holiday Inn Express parking lot? What's the matter with you?
It's beautiful weather today here in Cleveland, and you know, I figured I would just get the anxiety out, get the legs loose, and you know, I asked all the players what they're going to do between, you know, last night and tonight, and. I mean, Anthony Rizzo said he was going to go watch the Discovery Channel, and Javi Baez was going to dinner with his folks, and nobody invited me, so I just have gone walk around the Holiday Inn structure Cleveland look. Which
Anthony Rizzo's going to watch the Discovery Channel. Who's going to explain it to him? You sure he's not going to watch Nickelodeon? He's a child. He's a man child.
He's a very powerful Anthony Rizzo who's having a tremendous series and is in line to – be the MVP.
He's just a fun big kid.
I think Anthony Rizzo probably has some deep, deep intellectual stuff going on below the surface that he just doesn't
like. Hold on a second. Let's go inside Anthony Rizzo's head. See ball, hit ball, have popsicle. That's what goes on in Anthony Rizzo's head. Well, you don't want anything more than that. And then when he's on defense, see ball, catch ball. That's it.
Well, he doesn't want to see ball, catch ball, think about ball when he's in his room before Game 7, right? So he's staying away from the ESPN, if you believe him. And he's going Discovery Channel, so he can just watch Animal Eat Animal. I think that's a fine choice.
See animal? Eat animal. all right, so how did you feel about your favorite manager, Joe Madden, and the Aroldis Chapman incident, which is a band I was in?
Yeah, I wanted to kill him. I was not pleased with the call at all. I thought it was incredibly unwise, risky, short-sighted, all of it. And, I mean, there's so many levels to it. Why put him in the seventh first? You're up 7-2. And then to not have somebody ready to go in the ninth, I mean, now you're, like, really bordering on insanity at that point. And they finally, you know, obviously got somebody up and got him out after one batter. But You could have rolled the dice and most likely come out just fine and have arrested Chapman going into Game 7. So they don't have that, which I still think that Aroldis should be fine. But the decision-making just on its own, pretty peculiar. And not a lot of Cubs in that locker room, not that they were going at Joe Maddon, but people were just saying, you know, hey, you know, that's what he does, and I don't try to second-guess him. But it was pretty clear that the clubhouse was not on board with Chapman being in the game as long as he was.
Well, that's interesting. So some of the guys were concerned.
Yeah, I mean, John Lester was saying, you know, I don't try to get inside Joe's head. That's what he does. And David Ross said the same thing, basically. So there's a lot of that. And, John, I think a lot of those guys have very quietly kind of quibbled with the way they've been used, some of the relievers, some of the starters. And you could just get a little sense of that last night with how Chapman was deployed, so to speak. But, again...
Right, you know, so again, official word from Mark Carmen is the Cubs clubhouse is coming apart at the seams.
No.
sure, the picture painted there.
The poison inside the Cubs clubhouse is palpable.
You know, guys have opinions, Steve. They it doesn't necessarily mean that they are going to be affected by having a thought, right? They're allowed to be like, what are you doing? And then, okay, great, it worked. Let's see how he goes. Let's see what he does tomorrow. Listen, every single guy in that clubhouse, I'm sure, would love to see Aroldis Chapman on the mound tonight, and the Cubs have a lead in whatever inning Joe Maddon chooses to use him. But, well, yes, they're unified. They're the unified team.
Wow, that was a quick change. I mean, I can understand.
Gave himself whiplash.
Yeah. I can understand David Ross maybe being a little unhappy that he's not in there and Wilson Contreras is in.
We just got a statement from David Ross. He quits. He quits. He just says, right? I quit.
Oh, he's not going to play one more game?
Nope, he's done. He's done today.
I mean, it seems he would stick around for
Says he's had it. Carm called this. We should have seen it coming.
Chapman threw 20 pitches last night. I mean, and he had a day off in between. That's he should be okay.
He's lucky to be alive.
Yeah, right. Oh, so he's not throwing 103. So he's throwing 100.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think he'll be all right.
That's a Steve Cochran-like number. All right, give me your prediction for tonight.
7-3.
Oh, you think it's a blowout? See, I got 3-2, 3-2, bottom of the ninth. Aroldis Chapman comes in for the final two outs. 6 pitches, 6 strikes.
Oh, wait a minute.
How's that for specific?
I didn't think about a prediction, and you just threw it out there, and those are the numbers that raced into my...
Hey, watch out for that car. He's still watching.
I would give him 68 pitches since Sunday, Steve.
He's lucky to be alive.
Do you guys think we will see, though, the Lesters and even Arrieta? I mean, do you think tonight's going
to
be kind of like
a
swan song?
If you get to Arrieta, it's a problem.
Yeah, not Arrieta. But I do think that there'd be a chance we'd see John Lester.
I bet we'll see him.
Don't you, Mark?
Well, Lester talked about that, Dave, and he does not seem comfortable. I mean, he said, I'm uncomfortable doing it.
Okay,
starter going down. So, really? I mean.
Well, we're uncomfortable watching you throw to first, so maybe you're ready.
No, or not throw to first. Yeah.
Believable.
I'm not saying it would be an odd circumstance for Lester to be in the game tonight.
Odder than you walking around a Holiday Inn parking lot?
That's probably of equal odds.
Yeah, I got it. It's Mark Carmen live from Cleveland. He and Kevin Powell will give us the full report on what happens. They won't be sleeping a wink tonight. And all of our baseball coverage, Dave, is brought to us by people who I've got it right here.
Wintrust.
Wintrust, home of Cubs Checking and Sloan Water Connects Us. Good luck, Carms.
Thanks, Steve.
Be safe, Carms. Yeah. Hey, maybe we can send the Channel 9 copter, you know, that had been flying over the field to the Holiday Inn, and we can watch Mark pacing the parking lot.
Why not? They're going to need something. Yeah. They got to fill the time up. 9:50, back after this with the picks for the Wang Dang Doodle next. And guess what? The don't cares go first. 720 WGN. Yes.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
The Wang Dang Doodle.
Are you serious?
Yep. It's happening again.
Because of incessant whining by the team of don't cares and their captain, Mary Vandeveld, we now go and allow them to pick first. Are you happy now?
Yes. Yes.
Mary,
it's
if you're
time, all the texters were for it.
Mary, if you're ready to go, that's great. Sandberg, if you're done tormenting children about their Halloween candy, who goes first?
I want the texters to weigh in here. I think more people are going to say it's funny to tell kids you ate
so
their
wrong.
Candy.
So wrong. We'll do it tomorrow. We'll do a text question tomorrow about it. Or you could do a super fast text now at 312-981-7200. Okay, so who goes first on your team of losers?
Bennett.
All right, Bennett, who are you picking?
Come
we
on,
need a quarterback.
Derek Carr.
Derek Carr's a good pick.
And
Oakland Raiders quarterback.
Pick that game.
Oakland hosting Denver.
Oakland is going to beat the Broncos 14-7.
14-7. So you're picking a quarterback that's only going to have possibly two touchdowns.
Yeah.
Okay.
Confident.
Who's next?
Mary.
Yes. I'm going to go with Matt Ryan because he did well last week. I like
good
him.
Call. Atlanta, Tampa Bay.
And Dallas over Cleveland. Surprise. 30-14.
Yeah. That's actually, those are very good picks.
Well, it should be. Finally get to pick in the top five.
Yeah. Keep winning. Next.
It's Grzanich, and I'm going to pick for him. He's got Tom Brady.
Okay.
Tom Brady's not playing.
Tom Brady's off this
week. You know what? You should have thought of that before she picked him. Go ahead, Mary.
No.
You know where Tom Brady
I can help her. She's on my
Stafford.
Team.
Matt Stafford.
Okay. What? Detroit Lions. That's a good pick.
And he's going to take the Lions because the Vikings are hurting after the Bears.
They're a mess.
And he's going to do 21-7.
Vikings offensive coordinator Norm Turner resigned this morning. And finally, Sandberg.
Well, there's John DeCoste, but I left him a voicemail. He did not call back yet.
All right, we'll get his picks later.
Yeah, I am going to take Cutler.
Jay Cutler, also not playing.
They're
good
not
call.
Playing.
Hey, you should have thought of that before she picked him.
I'm not used go to ahead, having Mary. To pick so early. I'm going to take Ryan Tannehill.
Your Miami Dolphins hosting the Jets. Score?
I'm going to take 9-7, and I'm going to take the Dolphins.
Okay. Seems like you missed one that was pretty obvious there.
I know.
All right, anyway,
that's
go ahead.
Is that everybody?
That's all of us.
Can
yeah.
I pick for DeCoste?
No.
No, DeCoste will call in his picks.
Yeah, right.
All right, what about the Duke Cares?
The Duke Cares.
No
is.
Time?
No
I'm
time.
Being told there's
what?
No time?
No time.
All what? Right, the Duke Cares are getting bumped to tomorrow's show.
Yes.
And I'm not sure we'll have time tomorrow.
No, it's too busy.
After we may have to pick off the air.
We're winning by so much, it probably doesn't
Dak matter. Prescott, I called it. It's 9:57. We're back with Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN.